On this episode of the Variable Podcast, I was joined by one of the crowd favorites, Ayla Girl, and her friend, Awesome Kate. We had a fun little conversation. Hope you enjoy it. If so, please rate, review, subscribe, all that good shit on iTunes, Stitcher, Podomatic. Enjoy, motherfuckers. Guest, along with Ayla, who is the returning heavyweight champion of my podcast.
Hey. Do we have a topic for today?
Well, actually, we can talk about whatever. I did have one thing I wanted to ask you about. I don't know if you guys are into the UFC at all, or MMA, probably. Yeah, I didn't think you guys were huge fans. Were you aware that they had the first women's UFC main event last night?
How'd that go?
Well, a woman named Ronda Rousey won. She's yet to be beaten.
She's,
she's like a fourth degree black belt in judo. She's the first American woman to get a medal in judo in the Olympics. She's a bad chick. But, it's the first time, just a couple years ago, Dana White, who's the president of the UFC, said that he would never have a women's division. You know, that he would just never do it. And he's changed his mind basically based on how tough and how skilled this one woman is. And then, of course, you know, there's other women that are coming up that are, you know, going to be competing with her. But yeah, last night was the first ever women's event in the actual UFC. There's been other smaller promotions that have done women's fights, but this is the first, you know, UFC. And it was actually the main event at the Honda Center in Anaheim, which is, I think, 15,000 seats. And I'm pretty sure they sold it out. It was, I thought it was pretty cool to see. I know my fiance was pretty stoked about it. And, you know, both ladies who fought are very tough. The woman she beat is a Marine Corps veteran. I think she did like three tours in the Marines. And, but she still beat her in less than 5 minutes with an arm bar.
Do you think he had the woman on because of he was like, women are awesome, or just because he thought it would make him more money?
I'm sure that money probably played a part in it, but in interviews that I've heard with him, he said that the deciding factor was meeting Ronda Rousey in person and seeing like how technical and how skilled she was, and like her, you know, she's really determined. And her mom was a really high level judo practitioner too. So she kind of comes from a family of it. Yeah, she's tough. She's bantamweight, which is 135 pounds, and most men in that division, I would put money on her against, because she's just unbelievably skilled. But I know you guys aren't into that, but I just thought that I would ask, you know, I'd give you a little bit of background and then ask you, like, what do you think of that? Like, would you watch a women's MMA fight, or do you think you get into that, or just not? Not interested.
What do you think, Kate?
Well, I just recently started training with a personal trainer, and I'm trying to get I want to be a machine. So I'll probably watch it and be inspired. Yeah.
Yeah, she is definitely in shape. Unbelievable shape, and you can tell the difference, because there's been women, one woman in particular, who was on steroids and all kinds of other shit, and she looked like a man. But you can tell with this woman, I mean, she's hot, she's really hot, and she's also, you know, she'll rip your fucking arm off if she decides to. So it's kind of interesting. But you can tell that she's not on anything. I mean, obviously, they're testing those people like crazy for any kind of steroids and stuff anymore. But you can just tell by looking at her. You know, she looks, you know, she has a woman's body. You know, she doesn't have, like, some weird, you know, crazy upper body or anything like that. She has a woman's body, and she just trains really hard. I don't know, it's impressive. It's impressive to see. But, yeah, so you're working with a trainer, just, like, doing, like...
It's sort of split. Yeah, it's split. Like, I do cardio on my own, and with my trainer. My trainer's a girl, and she's ripped, and she's a machine, and she's hot, and inspiring to watch and work out inside. And I do... I do a lot of weight training, and I have like a split, you know, so I do upper body, lower body, and then sort of deal, and it works, it feels great.
You people are crazy. I can't exercise unless, like, I think it's not exercise.
Like, you trick yourself?
Yeah, I trick myself. Like, if I go out and, like, they're playing a game outside, I'm like, hey, I want to join, you know. It's kind of a side effect that I happen to exercise from it. But if I stop and think, hey, I'm exercising right now, then I'm like, oh my gosh, I can't do it. No.
Maybe some kind of, like, sports, or maybe even getting into something like jiu-jitsu or something would be cool.
I've tried self-defense, like, you know, karate, a couple lessons when I was a kid. But for some reason, I really hate it.
Yeah. Well, jiu-jitsu is different because it's grappling. There's no striking. So you're not going to show up on cam with a black eye or a broken nose or anything.
Well, I mean, it's not that I'm, like, scared of, you know, the violence. But I really like, you know, being rough. And I enjoy adrenaline and force and, you know, pain a little bit. But I just don't like the lessons in it. It makes me feel really awkward.
Yeah. Yeah. And I suppose... a big part of that would be finding the right teacher. You know, that's... getting into jiu-jitsu is something that I'm considering doing, you know, with a small child. You know, my time is obviously really limited, even after I get off house arrest. But I'm thinking about starting jiu-jitsu once all this house arrest nonsense is over.
Have you considered taking self-defense lessons, like, related to your career currently?
No, I never thought about that. No. My intention when I got into working out was making my body really efficient. Like, I was eating clean, completely clean at the time. I haven't since I've been traveling recently, but when I am home, I eat completely clean. I become, you know, I'm trying to get all of the toxins out of my body. I just... And I want to use them in real ways. Like, if somebody were running after me, I have confidence that I could
outrun them.
Yeah. And I could turn around and punch them in the face. You know, I could. So it's that stuff is just secondary to making my body, like, the perfect, that, like, you know, as perfect as it could be type deal. I have thought about that before.
So when you say eating clean, do you, is it like mostly vegetarian?
No, I eat a lot of meat. I eat fish, tilapia, salmon, and then some chicken.
Yeah, just trying to avoid too much red kind of stuff.
Yeah, I don't really eat any red meat when I'm home. And then, yeah, lots of vegetables and barely any. They're just carbs in the morning if I'm going to go to the gym. Yeah.
Are crazy. Like, if I were going to be healthy, I would need to hire a mom that I could, like, fire at any point. So just be like, yeah, just give me good stuff.
You just need, like, a nutritionist to be, like, camped out.
Yeah, exactly. I need a camped out nutritionist.
That's what I need, because I have, my willpower is terrible. I'm trying to eat better, but at the same time, I love beer. So you can eat a really healthy diet, but if you drink beer like 3 or 4 nights a week, it really doesn't matter.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But anyway,
you sometime this week.
Dancing
is pretty much the best exercise ever.
I've read some stuff about that. So did you go out? I know you recently celebrated your birthday.
21st birthday, yeah. Yeah,
have a good time.
It was very low key. I did get drunk.
I ate a Roo Burger.
Yeah.
You ate some kangaroo?
Yes, I did. I ate a Roo Burger.
Is it good?
Yes.
Yes.
It's very gamey.
I wondered about that. It's really gamey.
It's like, imagine eating a piece of sausage like that. It, you know how you bite into a piece of sausage, it kind of has, like, give back, like, it's squishy. Like,
yeah.
It's sort of what a roux is like. It didn't just tear apart. It was sort of squishy.
And roux is really cheap here because kangaroos are too
rampant. Yeah.
Yeah, I would think that, yeah, getting some kangaroo meat would be pretty cheap.
Well, everything's expensive here. So it's, when you say something's
relatively
cheap, it's like, oh my God!
Yeah, I spent $8 on a milkshake the other day, and instead of bringing me, like, a chocolate milkshake, they brought me chocolate milk.
Yeah. Their milkshakes here are just pretty much milk syrup and milk. And if you say chocolate milk, they think it's, like, powder or, like, pre-made chocolate milk that you buy at the store.
An $8 milkshake, man, I'm expecting whipped cream,
cherry,
like, maybe sprinkles or nuts of some sort.
Yep.
It reminds me of that scene in Pulp Fiction. You know, when they go to the restaurant. I don't know if you know what I'm talking about.
Yes.
It's the milkshake, and he's like, you know, there's just milk and ice cream, right? You don't put bourbon in it? And he's like, no. And he's just, like, puzzled by that. That would drive me up the wall.
Yeah.
So everything's like that? Like, or is it just food, or...
Well, Subway costs the same. I was really happy about.
Yeah.
Subway doesn't change its prices across the world, so you can still get your $5 footlong.
Oh.
That's a pretty famous commercial.
Yeah.
They have the $5 footlong commercial even in Australia.
Yeah.
Is it somebody with an Australian accent saying it, or is it still an American saying that stupid fucking jingle?
Oh, I don't know. I haven't seen the commercial.
Yeah.
I just know that they still sell them.
Yeah.
We haven't watched them.
Yeah. I wonder, do they, like, add stuff to their menu that you don't see in America, or...
Yeah. They put pineapple on their burgers here.
Yeah, I've tried that. They do that, like, that's just every burger you get, like...
Customary.
Custard, kind of like a slice of tomato here, I guess.
Yeah, tomato lettuce. Yeah.
And we went to McDonald's, and poor Kate was staring at the thing, and she comes over, and she's like, what have they done?
Yeah.
This is not McDonald's.
Like, what is this macaroons with my burger? I don't want macaroons.
What?
Yeah.
Macaroons. Now, what the fuck is a macaroon? I've heard of them.
Who knows?
I've heard of them. Isn't it like some kind of? I thought it was like some kind of candy or a cookie or something.
Yeah, it's like a little. No,
it was those colored cookies, right?
Yeah. They supposedly taste like egg whites or something. Huh. I haven't had them yet.
Isn't that like instead of French fries?
Oh, they don't call them fries.
They call them chips.
Oh yeah, that's right. It's chips.
It's really weird.
Yeah. So I wonder if they call French fries chips, what do they call potato chips?
Chips.
No, they're called
crisps.
They call chips.
Crisps, right?
No, the French fries are called hot chips.
Yeah.
Yeah, French fries are hot chips, but if you're ordering them in like a fast food place, they just call them chips and they assume, you know, that they're not real chips.
It's all context.
Man,
they don't have ketchup either. They don't have ketchup. They have tomato sauce.
But it's ketchup.
Or well,
is it the same? Oh yeah, it's not America, so they don't pump everything full of corn syrup.
Yes,
they're like much bigger on organic here, but they have to ship everything over. They can't produce anything here, so lots of stuff is pumped with preservatives. So, like one hand, it's more healthy, but the other hand, it's not. It's really weird.
Yeah, because I imagine it's really hard to like shop local because, I mean, how are you going to have a farmer's market whenever most of that country is desert?
Exactly. And they've been having a drought for the last, well, I mean, not for the last few years, but before that, there was a huge drought.
Damn.
Like, years long.
How do they even notice in Australia when it's a drought? It's already so dry, it's like,
I don't know.
It's even hotter and even drier than it normally would be.
It's actually supposed to rain here the next 2 days, and it's summer.
That's right. You're in the southern hemisphere, so you are entering. So you're coming out of summer and going into the fall months, right?
Soon. I think at the end of February.
Yeah, February or March. I always thought that was interesting, you know, like the tilt of the earth, you know, and it being the seasons being opposite. Of course, you know, I was just recently fascinated, you know, it wasn't that many years ago that I stopped wondering why people don't fall off the earth when they're in Australia. If you look at the globe, I don't know, it's a bad joke.
Do you think if the earth suddenly stopped spinning, it would all just fly off?
I don't know. I mean, if you think about it, it's spinning at like how many, it's moving through space at thousands of miles per second. And spinning at like thousands of miles an hour. I mean, you would think we would spin off the face of the Earth already.
Well, I mean, if it stopped flying, I mean, obviously gravity keeps us on, but if the Earth just like stopped flying,
if it just stopped rotating, I don't know.
Wait, I thought gravity was because of the size of the Earth.
Yeah, it is mass.
So then, why would the spin affect gravity?
No, the spin doesn't affect gravity. I'm wondering, like, if the Earth was, like, rotating like that, and then it just stopped, we'd all just kind of slide along.
It would just keep spinning?
We would. Like, everything would probably, it would just bump us forward.
Like everything would get scooted over.
Everything would suddenly just get shot forward with, like, a force.
Oh, my God.
That's a thought that I'm going to avoid the next time I do mushrooms.
You can't avoid thoughts with mushrooms.
Kate, do you enjoy psychedelics?
Oh, yes, I do.
Oh, that's awesome. You need to get our mutual friend here in a nice, calm, relaxed setting.
Yeah, well, she needs to
take the sacred mushroom.
I know she does. Before I met her, I really thought that she had already indulged in...
Me too.
Because the way that she is, she's so open-minded and free and relaxed and seems very aware. And so I figured she had already taken the journey. And she's like, oh, no, I've only ever tried pot and really not a lot. And I'm like, what? There's no way. Like, she really exudes that type of... Because I get along with people who have experimented so much more than people who haven't. And so she just seemed like she had already done that.
That's fair to say. I have no concept of, like, the difference of people. Like, I know culturally, but, like, you know, mentality. I never really thought that what you think is dependent on what drugs you do.
Well, with psychedelics, and especially with, like, mushrooms or certain other things like DMT or LSD, they have an effect that is humbling. And it really will, it, you know, it'll put your ego in check big time. And it kind of, it shows you, I don't know, in my experience, I always kind of take something out of it. You know, I feel like I learn something whenever I have a good mushroom trip. Because you, it kind of separates the id from the ego. So you're able to take a look at who you really are. As opposed to who you kind of portray yourself to be or whatever.
The idea of taking those, like, really freaks me out, though. I mean, I'm not exactly sure why. It might be an irrational fear, but, like, it really scares me. If somebody gave me mushrooms right now, it's like, okay, put it in your mouth. I'd be like, oh my God, I can't.
Yeah, like, and that would be, like, the totally wrong time to take them. You'd want to...
I can't imagine why you're afraid if you don't...
Sure.
If you don't even know what it's like. Like, maybe, have you smoked pot and felt, like, that sort of fear before? Like, that fear all inside your head? Like, have you ever felt that?
You mean while high?
Yeah.
Yeah? I smoked pot and it wasn't... I've had, like, some not very fun experiences on pot before. I mean, it might be fine. Yeah. And I'm really scared of putting myself in a spot where I can't get out of.
Yeah.
Like, what if I get high and then it's a nightmare?
Yeah.
Like, what do I do? You know, it's terrifying.
Yeah. And, you know, you hear stories and, you know, like...
Bad trips,
urban
yeah.
legends about people having bad trips, which is really something that is more associated with LSD than mushrooms. But people tell stories and... Really, what that's about is someone not who went into the experience in the wrong mind frame, in my opinion. I mean, that's somebody who, like you were saying, you would be scared if somebody just handed you some mushrooms right now. Well, yeah, then you stand a good chance to have a bad trip because you're going into it apprehensive and not comfortable.
Well, always be going into it apprehensive.
Not necessarily.
I mean, if you're
taking it in a setting where, like, say some, you decide, okay, I'm going to try these, you know, like, in a couple of days.
Uh-huh.
And this is what I would recommend anyway. And you've got Kate there, who is somebody who, obviously, you trust, and who has done it before. So she knows what's going on. And you get the mushroom from someone who's reputable. And who, you know, you're getting actual mushrooms that are going to make you hallucinate. And then you kind of set your intent that, you know, I'm going to experience this, and it's going to be a different state of consciousness than what I've experienced ever before, but it's only going to be a few hours, and then it'll wear off. It's not going to be forever. And
yeah, but if your sense of time gets dilated, then it's not necessarily just for a few hours.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you can feel like it's been a couple days if you take a large dose. But, you know, then again, that's where I wouldn't recommend, like, jumping into deep waters with a big dose of mushrooms right off the bat. You know, if you were to take a small dose, like, say, just a couple, 3 grams, I think you would be okay. And just having had several conversations with you and knowing your personality and your openness to new ideas and new experiences, I think you would do just fine. And the way that you're already really open and honest about yourself,
Maybe.
What do you mean maybe?
Well, maybe. Maybe that's why you're afraid to do them.
Because I'm not honest with myself?
Yeah.
I don't think so. I mean, it's definitely a possibility.
Anytime I've been afraid or paranoid, it's because there's something I wasn't addressing deep down, and the drugs forced me to bring them to the surface and deal with them. And I think they do the same for you, and maybe you're not ready yet.
Yeah.
Maybe you already know that's what would happen.
I
don't know. I'm just throwing things out there. I don't know.
I always thought it was more, like, I'm really afraid of losing control of my brain.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, the first time I ever got drunk, I sat there and, like, I drank alcohol, but I was, like, severely analyzing it. I refused to move because I didn't trust myself. And I just completely, like, logically narrated exactly what was happening to me. And I was, like, extremely controlled and tense. And I was like, okay, this is what's going on in my brain right now. And I was, like, really, really struggling to be in control of it.
Yeah, that's definitely not the approach you want to take with psychedelics.
That's
just
like the gut
reaction. Yeah, well, I mean, that's pretty much anybody's gut reaction whenever something new, a new state of consciousness, you know, comes into play. But it's just one of those things. I mean, and like Kate was saying, it will, you know, if you've got things that you haven't addressed in your life, it will bring them to the surface. That's for sure. But, you know, for me, that's part of the benefits, you know, because it's, you know, that's a good thing. You know, if you've got things in your life that you're not dealing with, or you've been kind of, you know, bullshitting yourself, or, you know, whatever, mushrooms will bring that to your attention. And then you can make the choice to, you know, learn from that and maybe make some adjustments.
Is it possible to have a really bad trip on mushrooms? Like, those things?
It's all about your... A bad trip is more dependent on you than it is the drug.
So I've had lots of bad trips. I've had a trip that completely changed my personality, like, 2 or 3 years ago. But now when I look back, I'm very happy that it happened. And any time a bad trip happens, I just become overjoyed, like, because it teaches me so much. So it's like you're going through it and it sucks, but know that on the other side, it's only going to be for the better. It'll never fuck you up. You know what I mean? Like, it'll never fuck your life up. It's just it's like a bad experience in the moment, but you really learn so much. You take in so much new stimuli and, like, become, I don't know, you just burst forth like a butterfly. Like, it's not even... It's never a bad thing overall for me.
Yeah. Yeah, there are times I've done some, like, really heavy doses. Because I've been eating mushrooms since I was, like, 15. So, you know, like, half my life has been after that experience. So, you know, I've gone into really deep waters with eating a large amount of mushrooms. And, yeah, I've had times where, you know, I was dealing with issues with addiction to other drugs, and I wasn't being honest with myself about how bad that was fucking me up. And, you know, when the mushrooms really got a hold of me, you know, it was a large dose, and then, you know, it brought that to my attention. And it's really hard to describe the way that comes to you, but it's just like it dawns on you, like crystal clear. Like, oh, this is what I'm doing to myself.
Yeah, in one second. Like, you know how usually your brain has to go through many statements and then you kind of clarify them and then you go through other statements and it's like, that's what's going on. Like, the way that it happens when you're tripping is like one thing arises in your brain and it all settles and, like, you see it exactly. You see you for exactly who you are. And it's just the same as you knowing who I am. Like, you look at you from another person's point of view.
Highly appealing idea.
Yeah.
Man, that's a great way of putting it. Is, yeah, seeing you, like, from another perspective and seeing the real you. And, you know, minus any kind of pretense, minus any kind of bullshit. And that can be a tough experience. You know, that can be a bit of an ordeal. You know, it's, you know, I've been, you know, at the peak of my trip and just bawling in tears because of the realities that, you know, were brought to my attention by it. But then,
so it's,
you know,
like,
later on, it was like such a great feeling because it's like, okay, now I know. And, you know, so I can move forward from here. You know, like it was tough because it's like it's almost like a stern parent bringing something to your attention when you're a kid.
But it's cool because it's you. So yeah. So you don't have to create, it's like an authority or something.
Yeah, without the authority.
Whatever. But the coolest part is that you can literally be sitting in the corner of a room and all the shit goes down. And the next day you're like, that was all me. That came all from inside. You know, so you don't have to be like, somebody is telling me to do this. It's all you.
Right. It is all you, because the way that the mushrooms work, and they've studied this, it alters blood flow between the left and right hemispheres of the brain, and that's what produces the effects.
Really?
Yeah. It is basically, you know, it alters your brain chemistry, and actually people use it, people who suffer from certain types of migraines will take mushrooms because it suppresses blood flow in a certain part of the brain that triggers the type of migraines they suffer from. But, you know, that's a whole different thing. You're apprehensive, so maybe it isn't the right time for it. And
if the worst bit of mushrooms comes from just, like, realizing shitty things about yourself, like, I can handle that.
It was also... beauty to it, because, you know, like what we've been talking about is whenever you really internalize the experience, but you can also choose to just kind of sit back and enjoy the experience, especially on a lower dose, and to a certain extent, you know, you're going to see, you know, altered perceptions, you're going to see the geometric patterns and things that you probably have heard people talk about before. And it's not like what you hear people talk about, like this crazy shit of seeing green fucking leprechauns running around the kitchen floor and shit like that. That's not it. What's going on.
Yeah, that's salvia.
Fucking salvia. Wow. I haven't fucked with that in a long time. Fuck that. Yeah, that's like salvia or DMT, and that's really deep waters. That's like not for beginners type stuff.
Yeah, salvia is the first thing I made Olivia Rinzi get high on. But, you know, you've heard that story.
Jesus. Yeah. Yeah, didn't she keep trying to get up? Didn't she say she kept trying to stand up or something? Or?
Something like that.
Yeah, that's the main thing.
It was the elementary school in broad daylight.
Yeah, like the number one thing you don't want to do on salvia is get You just want to sit the fuck down. That's like the number one thing you should do when doing salvia. Don't get up.
I think mushrooms would be a lot less scary if I could just take like a tiny little piece and then like see what it did. Be like, okay, I'm okay with this. I can increase it.
Well, I mean, that's totally possible.
That would make me less scary.
You can take like a mortar and pestle and grind it up and even put it inside. Take a capsule of, you know, whatever medication. Dump that out. Put the ground up mushrooms inside the capsule and just take it. That's what a lot of people do, because mushrooms obviously don't taste the best. And some people have a real hard time with eating them. And so I know some people will do them that way.
So mushrooms are actually literal mushrooms, then?
Yeah.
It's a
certain type. There are a few different types that are
psilocybin
mushrooms. And then there's also another type, which is Amanita muscaria mushrooms. But that's a different chemical, but it's also hallucinogenic. But that is, with the Amanita mushroom, that's a whole different thing. And there's a really good book called The Sacred Mushroom and the Cross. And it's about the early Christian church and how the early Gnostic Christians, they were basically taking a lot of Amanita muscaria mushrooms and having orgies. And this was written by one of the guys who translated the Dead Sea Scrolls, John Marco Allegro. So he knows what he's talking about. And he actually traced the root word for, I think, for Jesus. I believe, I don't know, I don't want to say this because I don't want to misquote it, but one of the, it was either the name Jesus or one of his, like, titles that they give in the Bible, they, when you trace the phonetics of that back to the root language, which was ancient Sumerian, it means a mushroom covered in sperm. Like the, yeah, the combination of the experience.
What kind of culture would come up with, like, a word for that? Like, oh, what do you do? Oh, so I'm over here using this mushroom covered in sperm. Single word. That's funny.
Yeah, well, the Sumerian culture is really fascinating. And, you know, the earliest known civilization that we have a lot of evidence about, yet we can't. You know, I think there's just a couple people who can actually read some of their text. I don't think, and even then, I think most of it is still, like, they can't translate it. Because there's no Rosetta Stone, there's no other cultures who were using writing at the time to compare.
I find it fascinating to think about, like, you know, we got all, you know, civilized, all in our business over in Europe and, you know, some of the Middle East kind of deal. And then we went over to America, like, and is all the native cultures that we think of when we think of, primitive culture, is that pretty much just looking into our own past?
Well, they did DNA testing on Native Americans, and there's actually a small amount of shared genetic material with Asians. And that's from nomadic people crossing the Bering Land Strait.
Right.
Whenever it was still a solid strip of land, you know, following whatever their herd food source was at the time. And then moving from there southward, down through North America, Central America, South America.
And there's no relation to Jews there, as the Mormons like to say.
Yeah, that was actually who... It was a Mormon who funded the research that showed that, because he was trying to prove that the Native Americans were a lost tribe of Israel, which is, I believe, what the Mormons claim.
Right.
And oops, you know, Native Americans are actually descended from Asians.
I am amazed at how people can still be Mormon while the evidence is out there. Being like, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's really, it's a cult. I mean... But it's like it's gotten big enough that people are just like, oh, well, you know, that's the freedom of religion. Da, 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 da. It's like, okay, so what is the number that a number of members that a cult has to arrive at before, like, they can get pissed off whenever people make fun of their silly beliefs?
How do you define a cult?
I don't know. I guess, yeah, that would be...
Good question.
Yeah, I guess, you know, to me, and this is just my humble opinion, and most people who listen to this podcast are not going to be surprised by this, but to me, there's really no difference between a cult and a religion. It's just a matter of size and popularity.
Well, yes and no. Like, I mean, a lot of people consider Buddhism to be a religion, but that is, like, pretty much the broadest thing for a cult. Usually, a cult is defined by, like, isolation from external influences, a highly regimented, well, no, like, very specific doctrine that they get their beliefs from, extreme difference to mainstream society and their views, and lots of control tactics.
Yeah. But, other than, like you said, Buddhism is kind of the exception, because that's not... People consider it a religion, but it's really kind of like the anti-religion.
Are you Buddhist?
No. No, I'm not anything. No. I'm not anything. I'm from the Church of Who Knows. I am ordained, actually, from the Center for Judaism. From the Big Lebowski.
I saw that
Church of Judaism. Yeah, they have a Church of Judaism. And I have my certificate of ordination hanging on the wall proudly. Now, my mom is actually a fundamentalist Christian. She's a preacher, actually. Yeah, which is...
Can you be a fundamentalist woman preacher? Is that like an oxymoron?
Well, yeah, I don't know. And she makes it work, you know. We don't really talk about it. We've kind of just agreed to disagree. Because, you know, we bumped heads so many times over it that it's like, look, okay, I'm an adult. I believe what I believe. And you can believe what you believe. And we'll just have, you know, respect that, you know, we don't agree on that. So we really don't get into that too much. I mean, I used to think that it was, you know, like, that I should point out all the, you know, all the contradictions in the Bible and all the, like, ridiculous statements and, you know, things that are in the Bible to her. But it's like, you know, at some point, I think for a lot of people, belief is more powerful than evidence.
Right? For most people?
True for most, yeah, for most people. And so it's really kind of pointless to try and, like, point out to someone who's spent years of their life thinking a certain way. I mean, you can show them all the evidence that you want, but they're going to rationalize and do whatever.
What are you going to say, Kate? Well, I was just thinking about the difference between belief and evidence, and then I was thinking to myself, isn't evidence, right, sort of like the belief in your senses? Like, to be true?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, yeah, I suppose to a certain extent. Although, to me, I consider evidence, you know, things that can be proven by the scientific method, you know.
I mean, you have to believe in the scientific method for it to work.
Yeah.
Repeatability
of something, you know, like, you know, you can drop an object that weighs a certain amount and measure how long it takes it to hit the ground, and it'll be the same every time because, you know, gravitational constant.
But it's still believing your senses.
Yeah, it's still believing that what you're seeing with your eyes is reality. I mean, you know, and with that, you know, we could go into simulation theory and...
What do you mean? Even if it's simulated, it's still real.
No, not simulated. It's sort of like my father and I used to talk all the time about the time that light takes to bounce off of an object and reach your eyes. You're actually seeing something a fraction of a millisecond, you know, later than it actually is there. Do you know what I mean? Like if you're driving down the road and you see a horse, you know, the time that it took for all of the stimuli to reach your eyes and be processed by your brain, you're experiencing reality. You're hearing it, smelling it, tasting it, seeing it all later than it's actually happening. You're never getting the direct experience.
But you are experiencing it in a state where it did exist, and that existence was real at one point.
But it's in the past now.
But it, nevertheless, the past is equally as real as the present.
Mm-mm. Not for me. Because memories are foggy. I make up memories all the time.
That's true. But, I mean, what actually did happen in the past was real. And what you're seeing is real or was real. And was and is are kind of still real, you know?
Maybe.
They're not just presently real. Although if you're talking about light speed, it might actually be presently real.
Yeah, I think that would be the difference. It's like just a matter of perception, you know. Like, and that's, you know, perceived reality. That's kind of where I'm at with how I approach a lot of things. You know, instead of like locking myself into some rigid mindset or way of looking at things, it's like, well, you know, this is kind of how I look at things, but other people perceive or feel a different way. Whether it's religion or some philosophical issue or whatever it might be, and for them that's equally valid in my opinion. You know, it doesn't make my experience, my perception any more real than theirs. It's just different.
Well, there is such a thing as an objective reality that exists apart from us.
Okay, it sounded like you had a comment there.
don't know if I believe that.
How so?
Well, do you think... I think in order to say something like that, then you have to believe that someday you'll experience it.
Not necessarily.
Well, then what does it matter? Like, why do you even bother to say that statement?
Because
make you feel better?
No, if there is an objective reality, that means you can measure things in regards to truth. Like, math is an objective reality, and if you put a wrong equation in, you can say, well, that's wrong, and you know it's wrong because there's an objective truth there.
Yeah, but math changes constantly.
Well, no, we discover math, and we discover new things, and we discover errors. But the math itself does not actually change. It's like we're discovering this world. We don't invent it.
I think we might invent it.
You can't invent math, though.
We can.
Nuh-uh.
We just were talking about this the other night. About how it's there, but it's not there at the same time, and it's here, and it's here.
Yes, but that doesn't mean it's... Well, are you talking about the double-slit experiment?
Like the quantum theory, you know?
But even so, whatever the quantum theory is, it is eventually at one point going to be able to be measured by... some sort of equation somewhere.
Yeah, but in 50 years, it'll be nil. That's what I'm saying, is that every time we find something and it's like, oh yes, this is always true, in due time, it's found to not be true.
Well, it's found not be true, but we found a higher truth that encompasses it, changes it.
Or in some cases, contradicts it.
That truth, they're all up, you just didn't get right.
Yeah, or expands upon it in the same way that Stephen Hawking expanded upon Einstein and then later even expanded upon himself, you know, even, you know, went back and realized, you know, that he was wrong in some of his theories and corrected himself. And I think that's interesting, these guys who are out there and they're working on, you know, what they refer to as like unified theory, you know, which is, you know, like a set of equations that would bring together quantum mechanics, gravity, electromagnetic force, and explain the way they interact in one elegant set of equations. And, you know, that's like what they're shooting for by experimenting, you know, like with the Large Hadron Collider and learning more about subatomic particles and trying to get a better understanding of these really, you know, like the smallest objects that we know of. But whenever they get down to that level, then, you know, experiments are affected by the observer when it comes to things that small. And then,
right.
You know, that's the whole thing with quantum mechanics. You know, I don't understand it. I don't know if there's anyone who really understands it. But it is interesting.
I understand it when I'm on drugs. I understand it.
Yeah. Well, you're at peace with your own understanding of it.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, because you realize, like you were saying a minute ago, you realize that your life is your life, and what you do with it is what matters. And the other things are really kind of, I don't want to say not important, but they're kind of extra, kind of ancillary, or, you know, to what's really important, and that is, you know, what are you going to do with your life? What are you going to do with you know, the experiences that you go through? Or I could be full of shit, and we could all be imagining this. And the real reality could be when we dream.
Yeah, last night I had a dream, and I couldn't get myself to wake up. And I was in Australia, but I couldn't find you. I don't know, but the whole point was that I realized that it felt just as real before I realized I was dreaming. And then when I woke up in the bed earlier this morning, I was thinking, yeah, it totally, like, there's no way to know whether this is a dream or not. There's no way.
because it feels real when you're dreaming.
Yeah.
It feels absolutely real. And until you wake up you think about it and you're like, that was ridiculous. That person's head was twice the size of their body. Why didn't I pick up on it? Like right now, I could wake up and be like, oh my God, we were doing a podcast with somebody. There's no such thing as a podcast or like something like that.
Who was it? Was it you who was telling me, or an article? I don't remember where I heard this. That, like, when you dream, it's essentially just an inhibition of the suppression of memory. Like, when you normally just remember things, there's like an inhibitor, so it's not vivid for you. Like, so that you can distinguish between, oh, you know, that's memory and this is real. So you don't, like, think of a tiger and then you see a tiger and freak the fuck out. It's like if there's a chemical in your brain or mechanism that makes it so that you can, that it represses
the
visual of memory. But in dreams, that's gone. When you dream, there is no inhibition between the memory, your imagination, and your perception of it as real. So that's why we think dreams are real.
I don't know. Have you ever been dreaming and realized you were dreaming and had people refer to it as a lucid dream?
Yes,
yeah.
All the time.
All the time? Really?
Oh, yeah. I taught myself how to do it like 2 years ago, and then I couldn't. It was getting to the point where I never felt like I got any rest because I was actively dreaming like one night, so I had to stop.
Right. Yeah, I take some stuff called Alpha Brain. And it's a good supplement. It's choline and AC11 and a variety of other vitamins. It's all natural stuff, but it's what they refer to as a nootropic.
Yeah.
And so it enhances your body's. Your own natural neurotransmitter chemicals, and it will cause me to have lucid dreams every once in a while, especially if I take a large dose of it. Like normally I'll take two, and it basically it just sharpens your focus, and like if I'm having a conversation with someone, it'll help me stay on track with, you know, like if I'm trying to make a point or something. Probably should have taken some today, obviously. But if I take like a double dose of it, then sometimes I'll have lucid dreams. And a lot of people have experienced that with this stuff. I think in Australia you can't get the original formulation of it because it contains B6. And I think Australia is one of the countries, I'm not sure, I know the UK is, but they had to make another version of it that's formulated a little bit differently and doesn't have B6 in it. But anyway, it's pretty cool. It's from a company called Onnit, O-N-N-I-T, which I don't know. But yeah, it's, I don't know, I had some weird dreams last night. So.
Really vivid dreams ever since you got here. Okay. Like really, really vivid, the crazy, crazy ass dreams. It's really weird.
I wonder why.
Yes, maybe just because you're in a different place and you're kind of experiencing a lot of new things. Maybe that's kind of like triggering
like,
that in your mind.
And you know, when I first got here I had nightmares for a couple weeks and then those went away.
Really?
But then Kate came here to visit, so yeah.
That's cool.
I've been fucking up my dream cycle, bitch.
Damn. I was just thinking about, you know how I said, like, before I really got to know you, like, I thought that you were really self-aware. And
uh-huh.
To me, when somebody is self-aware, it means that they are ever-present. Like, with every decision that they're making and every statement that they're making, there's also an observer. Like, where some people, like my mom, I look at my mom and I think she's just doing. And she's not observing what she's doing. And that's why if you ask her, like, very self-reflective questions, she's like, what are you talking about? Like, she can't talk about this deep shit because she's not ever present.
Mm-hmm.
And so now that I know that you haven't actually done a lot of those things, I'm starting to wonder if you are here like recording and here aware of this conversation like I am. Now that I know.
That I might not be like observing in the same
way and with the same, you know, intensity like I am. Like now I'm thinking that. Weird.
Possibly. I know that I've always been trying, like, as a young kid, I would, like, always try to view myself as an outside person, and it was, like, a habit to look at my thoughts as though I'm not the one thinking them, almost. It's very important. Like, I'm obsessed with being objective, so I really, really try to distance myself from myself and objectively review everything that goes on in my head.
Yeah, so then you may be naturally like that.
Well, it's not natural. I mean, you gotta try. You gotta work at it a lot, but yeah. I don't know, though.
But for you care about being objective, you know, when most people, or at least my experience was that I had to force myself to be objective, you know, and naturally I'm just feeling. Never evaluating my actions, just doing it and not really caring. It's weird that you do that.
I've always been incredibly rational with a very, very little of the feeling side. And only lately I've been trying to round myself out and start, like, I don't know, functioning on an emotional level. I'm not very accustomed to it.
Hmm.
But I don't know, I might take shrooms and be like, oh my god, this is what you guys are talking about!
And I love that. I love when that happens to people. I love seeing people like kind of switch on like for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen it happen a lot, especially at music festivals. You'll see the people running up to you like, oh, I love you. And oh my
yeah.
God, do you feel this? Do you know what's going on? Are you alive? And it's like, yes, this is great. You know, the first time that somebody gets like turned on, in the 60s, it was called like turning people on. And it really is like, you know, flipping their switch.
It really is. It's almost like, wow. How would I describe it? It's almost like being in a dark room and you've got night vision goggles on, and so does the other person, but theirs are turned off. And then you reach over and you switch on their night vision goggles, and all of a sudden they can see the room too.
Mm-hmm.
Only it's not everything's like in green and gray. You know, it's, I don't know. It's like you said, it's really interesting because I've seen that too. You know, I used to go to a lot of concerts and raves and stuff. San Francisco, whenever I lived in that area, and yeah, it was interesting to see, because especially in a large setting, large group of people, whenever someone gets turned on to that experience for the first time, and they're around a bunch of other people who are also on that same kind of frequency, I guess you would say, it's a really interesting experience. I think it's an interesting experience even for people who have, you know, even when it's not your first time. Like, I've gone to a couple of concerts and, you know, taken mushrooms, and it was a crazy experience because you really are attuned to the energy of the crowd along with the energy of the music that's going on.
I don't like
that. That sounds terrifying. Like, I was just imagining that, like, getting stressed.
One of them was like a lineup of like five really, really heavy metal bands. So yeah, that might not be a pleasant experience for you.
I don't like crowds because crowds aren't objective. Because when people go in crowds, it's a large majority of people who are all feeling things, and they're being swayed by the people around them, and it's all like, it becomes a group mentality. And you're no longer yourself, you don't have control over yourself, and that is horrifying. Like, I don't know why anybody could ever enjoy that. Like, I mean, personally, like, me, my infant's like, you can do this, but, like, so when I think of that, it's like, I don't want to ever be in a situation where I can't objectively
think
about
things. You're dancing with a group, like a choreographed dance, and everybody's doing the same motions and movements? Like, why are you okay with that?
That bugs me a little bit, but the stuff I've done, it was very, very gradual into it. So, like, we'd start out just, you know, doing like, hey, move this step. But yeah, you're right. It does bug me a little bit, the choreographed dances.
Just because you're doing the same
but
thing.
But it's not feeling emotion when they do it. It's highly, like, stylized, and you have to work on it, and it takes skill and and it's difficult. It's not like, whoa, I like this music. Like,
yeah,
you know, it's different, I think.
I mean, you know, not everybody's doing the same thing at the same moment. Even in a crowd, you know.
But they're feeling the same thing. That's why I got real humble. Even when I went to church, everybody would sing worship songs to Jesus. And I would look around, there would be this huge room of just people saying, they'd be like, whoa! And I hated it. I hated it so much.
Maybe it's because you never felt that, like the genuine feeling that everybody else was feeling, so you felt really creeped out that you, like, why don't I feel the way that the crowd feels?
Maybe. I think it was more, I didn't want to feel what they felt. Like, I had absolutely no desire. Well, I mean, like, I did in a general way, but, like, in regards to fitting in at that moment, I had no desire.
Yeah.
At all.
I can see that.
It's like, why are you doing this? You're not doing this because you personally feel like this. You're doing this because everybody else.
Right. If I was at a Bieber concert, I would feel totally disgusted. Like, I can't feel the way that these people feel. And I would be, like, really freaked out to be in a crowd of people crying and reaching up to him. But if I was going to see...
Hey, leave Justin alone.
But if I was going to see, like, Metallica or somebody that really means a lot to me, then it would be, like, a mutual, oh, my God, yes, we're all here together, and this is fantastic.
Although, I feel like if you feel that, you're sacrificing some of your objectivity. Like, because I have bands I love, and I'm imagining, like, going to see somebody I'm, like, really passionate about. But even if I did that, like, to feel passionate about that in the presence of other people and to feel that group thing, that I feel like I'm just giving up part of my mind, part of my objectivity.
Sometimes that's not necessarily a bad thing.
And, like, just feeling, not thinking, and that is...
Yeah, letting go and just, like you said, feeling and not thinking and just kind of letting go. I think that's a good thing every once in a while. Not all the time.
It's shit when they do that. They're like,
not all the time. But I think occasionally, you know, it's important for people to let go from, you know, analyzing and rationalizing everything and just to be in the moment and experience the moment and appreciate what you're doing right now and not rationalizing or analyzing it and just being, you know, just kind of turning your attention toward what you're experiencing without any kind of why am I feeling this way or why are these people doing that, and just kind of let it kind of wash over you and let the experience
stop asking why. It's like it's like giving up almost.
No. You're gonna ask why till you die.
Yeah.
If you don't start feeling things.
Well, no, you can't feel things. I feel things. I love, like, you know, like with bands, like I can get passionate about a band and feel the music and just lose myself in it. You know, I like fantasy. I love imagination. Just completely losing yourself in a world. But I don't know. It's different.
Yeah, for me,
I like
music
is awesome.
Really big.
Sexual activity, and that's why I think I don't like pot. Because I feel like I can't think on pot, and that, like, I don't like it.
Really, like, because, I mean, obviously, I haven't smoked pot in a long time. One of the things they don't let you do while you're on house arrest. But for me, whenever I smoke pot or take an edible, it's not that I can't think, it's that I'm thinking in a different way. And, you know, because I ingested this substance, whether I smoked a joint or ate a pot brownie or whatever, does that make the thoughts that I have while I'm under the influence of that any less valid than thoughts that I have while I'm quote unquote sober? I don't think so. I think that, you know, you can have, you know, it's just like with anything else, you know, you can have interesting experiences and, you know, you can go down interesting training, you can have interesting not very articulate after a couple of years. Oh, shit. alcohol is not going to cause you to have any kind of real revelations. I think we can all agree on that. But,
I
totally train wrecked on that.
When I'm high, I never stop thinking. It's like I can't stop. Yeah, I can never stop thinking. If I smoke weed, it's like I'm there for every single... So say we're sitting here and we're talking about, like, juice. All of a sudden, like, you'll start to think about a gnome, maybe. Right? Because that's the way that thoughts work. They just arise randomly. Or so it seems. But when you're high, it's almost like you're following the train, like, with every single turn it makes. And so you know why you became... Like, why you started thinking about a gnome. And that can be kind of scary, you know, for every single one of your thoughts to be, like, trapped out and laid in front of you. Because, I don't know. That's the way that it is for me, anyway. Anytime I'm high.
That sounds really appealing.
Yeah. I think it makes you a better thinker because you're more present for each and every little thought. Even though it may seem stupid, like, it's really not. It's needed to get to the next one.
Yeah, that's been my experience, and that's why I enjoy smoking pot more so than other drugs. But I can't do it right now, so, you know, it is what it is for the time being. But, yeah, I think it's not for everybody, just like mushrooms or anything else. It's definitely not for everybody. I don't know.
Maybe one day I'll, like, try it on cam, and it'll be like,
no.
Watch Ayla just trip the fuck out.
Oh my god.
That might be a less than great idea.
That idea.
Yeah, that might be a really weird idea. I don't know. To me, that would fuck with me.
Whenever I've smoked on cam, I have to end up just, like, logging off because.
Really?
Yeah, because if somebody says something, I'm like completely overanalyzing everything way too much. I can't just be like fun, bubbly, you know, sexy, whatever. Because I'll just sit there and start asking them, like, what the fuck's going on? What do you think is going on, guys? And like somebody will be like, you're a bitch or something. And then I'll have to sign off because I'm like, my God, do they really hate me? Like, am I really a bitch? Like,
so. I know I've talked to Ayla about this before, and Kate, if you're okay talking about it, like, how did you get into doing MFC? If you want to talk about that, if not, that's okay. What do you like about it?
What do I like about it? Everything. It's the best job you can ever have, ever.
It seems that way to me. If somebody would pay me to turn on my webcam and do what you do, I would totally do it. But nobody wants to see me do it. Nobody.
Well, I don't even think, and it's not, contrary to popular belief, it is not just how you look. Not at all. There's literally girls of all types. But one thing that you have to have in common, like, you have to be entertaining. It is my personality amplified on cam. It's tiring. Because as soon as I turn off my camera, it's like I'm depleted of all charm.
Yeah.
I start farting.
You just go like ugh.
Yeah, I'm like just sitting like, oh my god.
Yeah,
it
because
like,
you've kind of been, you know, in a sense, you're like on this virtual stage, in a sense.
These observers.
And, like, how did you get into it? Just like come across it and you're like, oh, this seems like...
I just came across it. I've always been, of course, I'm sure all of us have been, but I always liked porn, watch porn.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I did a lot of reading. I like to read my porn, but I did eventually come across the whole idea of camming through Live Jasmine pop-ups, but then, like, I typed in the, like, do cam girls make money? And all these people were saying, like, don't go to Live Jasmine, whatever. My free cams is good. If you want to actually have something like a variety show, which is what I wanted. I wanted to put my personality out there, not just the sexual part of me.
Right.
You know,
and I've noticed that with you and with Ayla, that's a big part of it. Is like, obviously there's a sexual component to it, but it's also your personality and the things that you do that really seem to work for you.
Yeah.
And kind of like set you apart as opposed to other people who are on that side. And I did notice that when I got on there the other day to send Ayla a message, and you guys were both on camp together, there was an unbelievable amount of people in your room. And I was like, holy shit. It was like 1,500 people. And I was like, wow.
That's good.
Yeah. So obviously, you two are doing something right. And it's really cool. You know.
Fabulous!
Yeah. I always like to see cool people doing something they like and being successful at it. Seems like you guys were doing that. Is there anything that you're less than thrilled about as far as canning goes? Like things like maybe like a pet peeve?
Well,
like people calling you baby?
It's no, baby's okay.
Yeah, two B's, that should be clear.
Yeah.
Hey, B.
Yeah, I don't like that.
That's, yeah.
No, I guess it's like you're getting a very small, I was just telling her this like yesterday or something, you're getting such a small piece of all the men of the world, and that small piece is usually very horny, very, you know, sexually frustrated, very, a lot of the guys look at cam girls and they see them as somebody who's demeaning themselves or some, you know, somebody who's allowed to be ridiculed, and so a lot of the time, like a large majority of guys come in saying rude things or commanding things or like overly sexual things. Like if I'm just sitting there talking and somebody comes in and is like, you know, whatever, it seems like everybody's horny all the time, but it's a porn site, you know, and yeah. So it's to be expected, but that can be a little bit, I guess sometimes if I'm not doing something sexual, I wish that it was like I had a YouTube channel, because then,
yeah,
you know, yeah,
yeah,
but
you
it's such
could
a,
always set up Ustream, although, you know, you can't be naked on Ustream.
Yeah, but I need to be naked. I need to be naked all the time.
Being naked's the best.
Yeah, Ustream and YouTube would be out. I don't know what Vimeo's thing is with that. But I don't think you can live stream to Vimeo. But anyway, it's really interesting because, like, for me, and I think I've talked about a little bit this before, for me, I find it interesting. I found out about the site because a podcast that I watched, the guy who produces it, he's into MyFreeCams, and he logged onto MyFreeCams while he was doing a live podcast on Ustream and had a conversation with one of the MyFreeCams models while she was, I don't know if she turned off her MyFreeCams room or whatever, but it was like via Skype, and like he was talking to her, and I was like, oh, that's an interesting concept, and like that's how I first heard about it, and I thought it was really interesting, you know. I don't know, it was just something that was kind of intriguing about it. For me, it's just to be perfectly honest, it's not hardcore, so it's not really something that like I'm like into in that way.
Yeah.
I find it just interesting more than anything. But like you were saying, with guys who come in and they're like really rude or demanding and stuff, I mean, to me, when I see that, it makes me think, okay, this is a guy who probably doesn't say 10 words to a woman all day in his normal life.
Exactly.
This is a guy who is scared to speak to the women that he actually interacts with in real life, and so he kind of like, I don't know, scratches that itch by coming on my free hands and being a dickhead.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, I guess it is what it is. You know, you're going to get a certain segment of people. It's open to the public like that, you're going to get a certain
right, and it's such a small downside compared to all of the great things that camming is,
right?
So,
because you can just like laugh at it and be like, yeah, okay, yeah, sure,
yeah,
we've seen it happen before, and it's yeah. Pretty much.
Oh, speaking of camming, though, we have to camp.
To go do.
So.
Okay. Well, I appreciate you coming on my podcast, Kate. It was awesome having you.
And this is awesome, Kate.
Yeah. If you guys, are you on Twitter, Kate?
Yeah.
Okay. What, ladies? Can you please tell the wonderful listeners of my podcast where they can find you on Twitter and my, on my free cams if they are so inclined?
That's so cool.
Yes, this is at MFC Awesome Kate, right?
Yes.
And she's also on
word.
MFC. Yeah, MFC Awesome Kate. And she's also on my free cams, and you have awesomekate.com, don't you?
Well, it's not up yet.
Not up, but it redirects you to...
Yeah.
Yeah, so...
Yeah, if you go to awesomekate.com, it redirects to my room. So if I'm online, it'll go to, my room.
That's a good idea. Do you post anything else on... Like, are you planning to, flesh that out into an actual, website, a blog or something?
Oh, yeah, eventually. Once I have more content, and I'm hoping to have more content, I think... Ayla's going to take pictures of me.
Yes.
In the next couple days, and I'll be able to have some pictures and whatever.
Yep. And I am Ayla, A-E-L-L-A, like the Amazon warrior who was slaughtered by Hercules. Warrioress, I guess. My Twitter is at Ayla_girl, A-E-L-L-A_girl. And I have a blog at AylaAbroad.com with two A's.
Yeah, which is an interesting blog. I read it.
To post one.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's been a couple that were really interesting. Reflections on your childhood. There was a post that dealt with that I thought was really fascinating. But anyway, I would recommend everybody go and check these lovely ladies out. Check them out on Twitter and check them out on my free cams if you are so inclined. And, ladies, thank you for coming on the podcast.
Thank you.
Thank you. And we'll see you later. Down the hills,